Hey guys, it's Andrew with Masters of E-commerce. I'm your host, and today we've got Tor Abrams from Sinfluence, right? And he is going to talk about today some really cool things, five ways to really explode to grow your ROI. He's going to go through that stuff. But before that, just a little bit about Tor. He's a former strategist at Google. He is currently at a large technology company working thing. He works with students, really great stuff here, working with age 12 to 18-year-old kids to embrace their ambitions. And he's also, now looking to transition out of his full-time gig into this world of online marketing, commerce type things. I mean, he's been doing this for a while. He's taken his knowledge and he's helped quite a few people, and now he is rolling out on his own, and he's here to share some really interesting insights. And then we're going to go through his five maximizing ROI elements, and then from there we're going to dive into one of those things to help you guys out there. So Dory, fire away if I missed anything on the intro.
No worries at all. No, Andrew, thank you so much for introducing me to everyone. And I think just to kind of introduce our background, as I say, you hit the nail on the head that I used to work at Google when I started my career in a role when I was working as a marketing specialist, making sure that I was working with small businesses, understanding their needs, what kind of things they look to drive as outcomes, and how different marketing channels can help them get there. Some of the many skills that I picked up there was really understanding the challenges that small business owners face and how they can actually get a good return on investment while not spending too much time. Just because I found that that was one of the common problems if you're a small business, say a one man band, or even if you have, 10, 15 employees, it's very difficult for you to be able to manage your digital marketing structure as well as everything else that's going on within the business. So as you hit the nail on the head there, I started kind of helping people locally, just people that I knew, in terms of helping them understand some of the things that they could be doing online in order to bring in more sales, understanding things about building their website, and obviously at the end of it, understanding how they can use tools like Google Ads or Facebook or Twitter in order to actually grow their sales. So really today, in terms of the five things that I wanted to share, they're all going to be focused specifically on Google, just in the interest of this. But Sinfluence, which is the organization that I launched, we're cross-channel. So that would be your Googles, your Facebook, your email marketing. That would be helping you with website optimization, Instagram, whatever it may be. But again, I could come onto that towards the end as well. So that's
Sure.
all good. Before I do get into the five, was there anything specifically that you wanted to know from me at all?
Yeah, so there was one thing. So when you're working with small businesses, and this seems to be the biggest problem with most small businesses, right? There is usually one, maybe two people in the business. None of them are really great marketers, right? So the challenges that they face, right, is how do they grow their business, right? I mean, what channel, where do they put their money in, and do they, since they're not experts in this and they're running, the P&Ls and the taking care of everything else that goes on that, what would be that type of in your service, like what would you taught tell a small business, how what's the most thing they should focus on? Like, where should they put their priority?
That's a fantastic question. I think with small businesses, what you've got to remember is they're completely different depending on which industry they're in. So if I'm an e-commerce business, for example, so let's say I sell shoes online, there are some really great resources that I could use just from Google alone. I may not necessarily need to set up Facebook. So let's say, for example, I sell shoes and I want to get my product in front of thousands of different people searching for shoes. What I'd be able to do is set up something like a Google shopping campaign, or just a Google search campaign. And what that will actually do is every single person that searches on Google, I can actually place a bid on being able to get my product in front of them. So what I mean by that is I'm willing to pay, let's say, 20p for someone to actually see the shoes that I sell online when they search for shoes to buy online and actually click on that particular product and then come straight through to my webpage. obviously that varies depending on a lot of things. So you've got to remember these companies have margins, they have targets they're trying to hit. When I come to consult with somebody, I'll always ask them, what are your targets? How much does it cost you to produce the product? How much return on investment are you looking for? Because that will determine which platform is going to be best for you. Likewise, there's going to be other platforms where it may work better not to use Google, may work better to use Facebook, for example. You know, if you're something like a massage parlor, for example, and you just want people to kind of see the visual aspect of what you do, you can get your Facebook ads up in front of them. So again, it can really vary business to business, but obviously, as you say, they're very small, so it's got to be about time management, which is one of the reasons why I always say to them, outsourcing it rather than insourcing it is probably the best idea to do. So almost getting someone to manage your campaigns for you makes a lot more sense than trying to manage it all yourself. Sure. So many people fall into that trap.
Yeah. And I think that's the key. I think one of the key things that, you know, when you do this consulting with them is to know what their goals are. And then once you know what their goals are, you know, what the metrics are, you know, what they're going for. So like, you know, what we say is kind of in the business, you know, the North Star, right? What is their one thing that they want? Is it registrations? Is it sales? Is it, you know, new user acquisitions? Is it getting people onto their email or Facebook messenger list? You know what I mean? Onto their Facebook messenger so that they can retarget to them later. You know, whatever that goal is, I'm guessing is kind of what you have a conversation with them on.
Yeah, exactly that. So like you say, always start from the goals when you're setting up this kind of service and then whittle your way down from there and figure it out going forward.
Cool. Awesome. So yeah, let's run through these things and then, you know, we'll hit one of these points and we'll talk a little deeper about them.
Yeah, sure. So just to kind of take you into it a little bit more, as I say, these are all strictly related to Google Ads and they're meant to be for people that have never used Google Ads before or someone who's used it, but not seen necessarily the best results in terms of driving ROI. So one of the first things that I always advise people is when you set up Google Ads, you're initially going to be tasked with deciding whether you want to go with a search campaign or with a display campaign or both. Now, a search campaign is the thing similar to what I described a little bit earlier. So someone's going to type in a set of words. So they may be saying, I want to buy shoes in London, at which point there's going to be a whole list of things that come up on Google, as you all know. Some of them are going to be paid for ads that are going to appear at the top of the screen. And then slightly below those are going to be organic searches that just come up and nobody actually has to pay for those. Now, the paid for ads are what's known as a search campaign. So when you set up a Google search campaign, you're paying to be at number one when people search for particular things. I'll come on to display a little bit later on, as that's one of the things that I mentioned later on in the five things. But actually, when you're setting up the search campaign, the mistake that a lot of people make is they're looking to bid on search queries or keywords that are going to be too expensive. So let's say, for example, let's use the shoe example again. I'm a company that sells shoes in London. And I'm now competing with every other company in London that sells shoes that's also advertising on Google. If I bid on a keyword that's shoes in London, it's going to be so expensive for me to be able to appear at number one because I'm bidding against hundreds, thousands of other businesses at once that it actually doesn't make sense for me to go with that particular keyword. It makes more sense for me to go with something a little bit more specific, like shoes company London, and then put my postcode. So wherever that may be, northwest, southeast, or whatever that is, that then whittles it down even further. Or if I could be even more specific than that, I could do something like shoes company London that specializes in trainers. These are just examples. These are just different ways to kind of extend out the key phrase, and its name is a long term word. Extend out that key phrase that will make it a little bit easier for you to be more relevant. Now, when you're more relevant, you're showing to more relevant people. So it kills that bird with that stone. But at the same time, you're also actually showing to people for a cheaper price because you're competing with less people when you're bidding.
Right.
So I know that can get a little bit convoluted, but if there's any kind of questions, Andrew, from your side, please let me know.
So it's building on the keywords. So we're talking about the shoes. It's basically the red shoe. You know, you don't want to do just red shoe because it's just too generic, right? So the longer the keyword phrase, red shoe, London, you know, Nike, So a Nike Red Shoe London, you know, that might be something where you're building out. And then the longer the keyword phrase, the 3 to 4 word type of thing, the more, you know, things. And I guess then from there, do you make them, I mean, well, this is kind of going a little more complex, but then you can do them sort of broad or matched or, you know, kind of type targeting exact match type things, right? Yeah. Right. Like that. So there's ways to, I guess, to build that around. You know, and when you're doing these kinds of campaigns, do you feel that, you know, having hundreds and thousands of keywords are key, or there's just, you know, 10, you know, maybe 100 keywords, 50 keywords, things like that?
I think there's ways to be smart about it, right? So I've seen accounts where people have got hundreds of keywords, thousands of keywords, like you described. And at the end of the day, not every single one of those keywords right. are going to perform. Never going to be the case. The wise thing to do is start out with a nice selection of keywords. So I usually advise that you have, let's say you've got one campaign set up and you've got a couple of ad groups in that campaign. The ad groups are literally just groups of keywords that your ads are going to show for. Within each of those, you may want to start out with 20 keywords, not too much to handle, not too heavy. And then after a couple of weeks of reviewing that, you may see that some keywords have brought you no traffic at all, brought you no sales at all. So what you're going to do is you say, I'm going to scrap these keywords completely. I'm just going to focus on the 2 or 3 that actually are bringing me business.
Right. So that makes total sense. So here's the other thing I think that businesses might not understand is the 80-20 rule of your inventory, right? So if you know you've got sellers that are bringing you 80% of your revenue and there's 20% of your products give you 80% of your revenue, you are only going to want to probably drive traffic to those 20% of those products. Is that correct?
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. Because I think businesses tend to think like, well, we'll put everything on there. But if they don't know what their revenue is per item, or you know their sales on a particular item, do you think it's just a waste of their time to just go and dump 1,000 keywords into just every single product?
Yeah. So that's the nice thing about Google and all the online platforms you can advertise on. So the way it's kind of split it out is you can specifically set up a group of keywords focused on one particular product. Mm. So that could be your best-selling shoe, your best-selling Nike trainer, whatever it is. You may want to direct more traffic to that than anything else. So you can actually set up that group of keywords and put a budget into all of those higher than anything else because you know that's going to bring you the best return. I think that's a pretty cool way of kind of managing that. But like you say, a lot of business owners don't realize that. They think it's just going to be 100 keywords, some will work, some don't.
Right, right. And then additional to that side, I mean, like we kind of have not touched on it, but, you know, it's also the ad copy that plays a big factor, right? I mean, in terms of getting people into clicking and then coming over, and then from that ad copy, that landing page needs to really tell the story of what it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. So being able to have the right message to the right person at the right time, that is insanely important when it comes to this kind of thing.
Right.
It's 50% of the job is figuring out the keywords and what's good and what's going to work. And then the other 50% is figuring out what do they want to see when they're put in front of, when you get an ad in front of them. Because until they click on that ad, that's the only image of your brand that they have. So that has to be something that's appealing, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. So in terms of landing pages and things like that, do you find, if you talk local, then, you know, they can buy local and then have that stuff shipped to them. Do you find like a lot of the local stores, you know, are creating their online presence? So where people don't even, if they're maybe 2 miles or 3 miles from their house, they'd rather order online and just have the box shipped to them, right? Or the product shipped to them rather than having it hop on 3 miles or 5 miles to get down to the place.
Oh yeah, 100%. That's kind of the era we're living in, right? Where people know everything's a click of a button away, as opposed to 10, 15 years ago, we actually had to walk outside and go and proactively get it. I think it's really good now to have a really well-defined landing page that shows that you do offer shipping service, because a lot of businesses do, especially for e-commerce. Or you know, other things as well, like putting on display the fact that you've got a number that you can call if you're a service type business. Different things like that are all going to be quite useful when it comes to building out your landing page and kind of bringing people in.
Right. Yeah, because that was one of my things, is that like you know, and stuff that we do kind of a jumper is that, you know, we feel that like it's almost better not to have the whole full e-commerce site, right? It's more of just a landing page. So like if you're talking, we're talking shoes, right? Maybe the store owner knows that they build specific pages that are really tailored, like one-off sort of like, I don't know, lead capture type pages in a sense, right? That could talk a little bit more about the shoe, build in that brand of that shoe. Maybe there's a video, maybe there's not. And then there's that buy button, right? So they commit, but they, you know, they sold the sizzle with some a decent copy. Or I guess people have also done, you know, just done their complete research, you know, through, you know, going here, going to Amazon, going wherever, and then they just want to buy. I mean, have you found, like when you're doing these types of things, what types of, you know, copy to landing page to either a e-commerce page or a fuller, more detailed page works better?
Yeah, again, it's a good question. The best thing to do when it comes to ad copy is to test multiple different types. It's something in digital marketing that's known as A/B testing. Mm-hmm. And what that means is rather than me have one ad copy that I'm going to set out across to every single person, I'll do two or three different types of ad copy. Four or five different types of ad copy, and then see which one actually performs better than the others. So that's one of the things that's really important with all of these kind of things, is to test different things that work in different industries. To answer your question, it can be very different in terms of ad copy. You know, some industries the ad copy needs to be direct and to the point. Some other industries they like to see a little bit more creativity with the ad copy. Mm-hmm. One of the things that should always be an ad copy is a call to action, 100%. So at the end of every single ad, you need to say something like, "Call now, learn more, click through to be able to get a discount," something like that.
Right.
That's going to bring someone to the website, give them an action to do at the end of that ad. But aside from that, it's really about testing, figuring things out. What do you use that time to?
Right. Have you found it, when you put scarcity into an ad, like only three left or four left works better?
Always. Yeah. Generally speaking, it does really tend to work. If you put scarcity into an ad, and it's still not working, the chances are that your service isn't in that high demand. Mm. When the demand is there and people see that the product is running out, it's simple economics, right? The supply is decreasing, but the demand is there. So surely those people are going to have to try and snap it up quickly.
Right, right. And what about like testing? Like, so you're thinking about bringing on a new product. You're not sure of what that is. Could you run Google Ads to kind of test like your user base and say, hey, we've got this new product coming in. The first 50 people who give us a review will get X amount of a discount.
Could do something like that. In terms of doing that and having that as a strategy to bring in long-term customers, because at the end of the day, you want to bring in people who are going to be lifetime customers,
right,
for most products, most services. That is a bit of a tricky one. Because mm-hmm. you've got to remember that you don't want to start off on the foot where you're almost bringing on people that are trying to get things for free or for discount. You want to let people know your product and service has got a value assigned to it. And that's the value you want to keep, because those people are just going to drop off as customers. Retention is really important in this kind of space.
Right. And so you've driven those people from a Google ad to your landing page. They don't decide to make that purchase right then and there, right? So what do we do next?
So if someone comes from a Google site to a landing page, doesn't make a purchase there and then, all hope is not lost. Actually, it's really good because you're going to have some information about that person, right?
Right.
So whenever anybody enters a website now, that website is able to do something to track you. And it's able to say, oh, well, do you know what? Tor visited a website on this date. And he went and he looked at this particular pair of shoes, but he didn't buy. Now, when I leave that website, my interaction with that website may be done, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you, as the website owner, you've let me go. It doesn't mean that at all. Essentially, what's happened now is you're able to track me and understand a bit more about my preferences, what things I'm interested in, and what I've done on your site before. So what you can essentially do is say, actually, for every person like Tor that's come to my website and looked at this pair of shoes, I want to be able to bring those people back again later, because do you know what? People who look at this pair of shoes, generally speaking, tend to buy them. I know this about my product. So I don't want to lose that person. I want to actually be able to pay to go out and get that person to come back to my website in some way, shape or form. That's a really awesome strategy that you can use on Google called remarketing.
Hmm.
And essentially it's probably the best thing in terms of actually driving good value leads with good ROI, simply because these people are warm. They've been to your site before and they know you. They recognize your brand. They've now left, but if ever they come back in market, if ever they're searching again, you want to be the person that they return to at the end of the day. And that's exactly how that works. That's a really awesome method to be bringing in more sales.
Right. And in terms of like the retargeting aspect, I mean, what kinds of conversion rates do you typically see from, you know, they, you know, and cost savings? I mean, obviously it's all over the board, but I mean, from an initial, you know, you pay maybe a buck to a retargeting that you maybe pay 50 cents to conversion. Like what is that? What does that funnel kind of look like?
Or that? I see. Yeah. So in terms of what the funnel looks like, again, as you say, it's always going to vary, right? I think e-commerce is the easiest example to use because e-commerce is unless you put much in, you get this much out. So I think when you're looking at e-commerce, typical e-commerce conversion rates may vary from around about 1 to 2% of clicks. So let's say for every 100 people that click on your ad, maybe 2% of them convert. Mm-hmm. Now I'm saying this generally speaking, just based on my experience working with what I've seen them doing. It may vary for some people that are watching this who are going to say, actually, I get 10%. When I've used remarketing for search, or when I've seen people use remarketing for search and use it properly, you're looking at 3 or 4 times that in terms of conversion rates.
Wow.
So I'm saying you're going to be taking a 2% conversion rate to an 8 or 10% conversion rate. Those are what you should be aiming for on the people that are returning. Now, on the flip side of that, you've got to remember, of course, that there was the point that, say someone comes to a website once through an ad, you've paid to get them there the first time.
Right.
And then if you do remarketing for search or remarketing for display, which is another thing, you're going to pay to get them back again.
Right.
Now, the thing with that is that it's not a loss, simply because if you're paying to bring them back to see one of your high value products, you're going to be getting a massive return on investment on that. Plus, actually, you don't necessarily need to have bought them through an ad the first time.
Mm.
When someone comes to your site, it doesn't matter how they get there. Once they've been on the site, all that information is available to you and you can remarket to them. So not all of these people you're going to have paid for twice. The ones that you do pay for twice, because the conversion rate's so good, you should be looking at good ROI on that.
Right. And do you have to kind of offer any kind of discount to them, or just say, hey, you left it in your basket? I mean, what have you seen that works really well?
Depends. I've seen people that do discounts and that does work very well. I wouldn't call out discounts for someone that's warm. It's going back to your earlier point about discounting. When someone's entirely new, it's a bit risky, but when they're warm, it's a bit different.
Right.
Usually with remarketing, because with Google, you can do remarketing for search. The way you got to think about it is like this. So this person's been to your site before and was clearly interested in your product, but they may not have bought for whatever reason. Maybe they hadn't been paid yet for a month. If they now search again for a similar product and you appear at number one, that means they're still interested in buying that product. That means they've never lost the incentive to buy. They just didn't have the means to buy previously. If we now bid on them again, the likelihood is that they now actually have that possibility of buying, or else they wouldn't be searching again. So actually, when you're bringing them back, you don't necessarily need to have a discount. You're just bringing them back because you know that this person couldn't buy on day one, but now on day 30, they're now able to buy. Right. And that's the whole premise behind it. So really, it's just about making sure that you're there for them, as opposed to thinking, do I have to be creative? What do I have to do? People do like to change the ad copy for search ads that are on remarketing as opposed to normal search ad, just in case you've seen these that thing before and they don't want to kind of come across as, we're just going to keep flinging ads at you until you buy. That's what I would say is cool, but I don't think that having to give a discount to bring them in is necessary, personally.
Okay. And have you seen things where I haven't tried this, but where you already have your audience, they've come in, they purchased, and then you kind of run a remarketing campaign towards the people who purchased with a thanks for shopping and here's 10% off your next purchase kind of stuff. Like they've already been that customer. Have you seen or run anything like that?
Yeah. So those kind of things are really good. So those ones where they're already a loyal customer and you give them a discount after, it's similar to what any company does, right? I don't know who's a good example in the UK. Somewhere in the UK, like Nando's. I don't know if you guys have that over there.
Which one? But
Nando's. It's a fast food restaurant that
I know.
So the UK viewers will get it. Essentially, it's a really popular restaurant that does grilled chicken. And what they do is they give you this loyalty card.
Mm.
On that loyalty card, every single time you come there, you get it stamped. And when you get a certain amount of stamps, you're able to get a free chicken or a free drink. Very similar thing will go for any online business. If you're trying to bring in customer loyalty, you've always got to build advocacy with the customers. The way to do that is by offering them things because they're loyal to you. So it's almost like any kind of exchange. And I think that whole thing of kind of someone's made a purchase, you can then retarget them with new ads that kind of say, you know, you made your first purchase on a pair of shoes. How about you get a nice pair of jeans to go with that? And you know what? We'll knock 10 quid off the price just because you bought before. So I think that whole method is really, really good and the real way of building continuous ongoing sales over time.
Over time. Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I know that the remarketing is pretty powerful when you do it through Facebook, but I think almost Google's better because they have really a buyer intent where the other one is more like, yes, you can get them. Sure, they like, you know, say in the States here, we have pet companies, right? So we'll stay with the theme. I think you've got, you know, the shoe brands that are here in the States, and then you've got online purchasers, and this is like a through Facebook kind of thing, right? And then there's this, the brand stores, right? But you don't know if they're really intent for looking for that pair of sneakers, where at least, you know, I guess in, with doing Google ads, you know, you kind of know that they're looking for red shoes and Nike and whatever. They don't buy, but then they're there, but they're going because it's what they're searching for, I guess. Right.
Yeah. So that's the difference that you say, the buyer intent is there with Google. That's why I love Google so much.
Right.
Not just because I used to work there. I'm not going to be buying.
And free lunches.
All of that stuff. And I think, the buyer intent is very important. When it comes to any buying process, you want to have warmer leads as opposed to completely cold leads. Facebook is fantastic for targeting. That's where I'll say it's definitely going to get one over Google. You can target people down to how much income they earn or their state, whether they're in a relationship or divorced or whatever. That I think that's incredible. But Google will always have that intent, which is the reason why Google is such a good search engine for small businesses as well. I think that's quite important.
Right. Yeah. So I guess it's something in a sense, I mean, if you think you're, I mean, I guess it's where knowing where your audience is, you know, I guess you could possibly run Facebook ads to get them to a landing page and then run double remarketing campaigns, I guess one for Google and one for Facebook. I mean, right. I mean, I guess, and typically they see it everywhere and they're like, all right, I'm going to buy these things. Tor's been putting in front of me, even though I don't like Nike, but I'm going to go buy it anyhow.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, right? So when it gets down to all of these kind of things there, and this is why I say to small business owners, sometimes it's easier to outsource. I think if you're really skilled with this stuff, you can make it work fantastically well. And if you've got the time to manage. But if you're a small business owner, focus on what you're really good at, which is, you know, maybe sourcing the shoes, the products, or closing the deals when they come in, closing the leads when they come in. Let someone else manage that whole funnel process of setting up an ad that can bring people to the site and then remarket all the way back around.
Sure.
Because, no, go ahead.
You can go ahead. Continue on. And
because I think for me, it took, you know, years of practice to learn all of these things and years to understand how all of these things work. And a lot of business owners won't have the time. So they're either going to do a half-hearted job or waste a lot of money. And I think that's the key thing.
Sure. So in terms of a budget, like what would you say for an advertiser would be a good sort of, you know, they don't have, you know, $10,000 to spend. Like what would you say to start out with, to test, things like that?
I usually advise a test budget of $100 on one platform.
Okay.
Only reason I say $100 is simply because I know that's manageable for most business owners.
Right.
And it gives you enough that you're able to do a decent amount of testing. Okay. Now, the reason I say $100 for a test is because the first couple of weeks of managing a Google campaign or Facebook campaign, it is going to be a test, right? Because you don't 100% know what's going to work. You maybe know what's worked in the past. Like I've got loads of examples of what's worked in the past and I apply that to everyone I go working with going forwards. But again, you know, it could just be a bad weather conditions at this particular time. So maybe not as many people are searching. You never know what could be affecting the situation. So that $100 is going to be used as an initial test budget. And then from there, you're going to know, well, do you know what? Of that $100 we spent, $10 went on this particular key term, and that really drove loads of business for us. So let's funnel $200 into that next month, or let's funnel $300 into it next month, depending on what the returns you're looking to get are. I think once you've done that initial couple of weeks testing, you already know that statistics and kind of outcomes you're going to probably get if you upscale the spend. So I just advise $100 to start as a test and then work your way up from there.
Cool. Awesome. I know we covered two of these things. I know we're kind of running towards our end of our time. You know, what are the other three things that we can, you know, that are there? Well, you know, they can find that post, I guess, on your site. But just like, let's quickly run through those three other things. That'd be great.
Yeah, sure. I think I started off by kind of discussing the keywords aspect. So making sure that you're using keywords that aren't too generic, and you can kind of be a bit more targeted and relevant with them. Another thing to focus on in regards to that is when you're bidding on these keywords, don't always bid to be number one. A lot of people think the best marketing strategy is to try and outbid all of the opposition every single time. That is a surefire way for you to be able to drive your revenue all the way down to zero, or not your revenue rather, but drive your profit all the way down to zero. Right. Because when you're competing with that many people, especially in a country like the UK or the US, it's going to be tough, right? So you're going to have to take some situations where you're not going to be number one. You're going to be number two. You're going to be number three. The goal is just to make sure that you're spending enough on the keywords that are most profitable. And then on the keywords that aren't so profitable, feel free to actually knock the budget down slightly, knock the bids down a little bit, because it's better that you appear lower on keywords that aren't driving the profit and maintain the same level of profit over time, as opposed to just bidding wildly on everything. So that's another very key thing. We touched on, of course, the whole remarketing piece. So that would have been point three. But then another thing that would be really good is looking at the Google display side. And usually when I start off with businesses, I don't actually encourage them to use Google display, because display is more of a brand awareness tool as opposed to a lead gen tool. But there is one particular way that I have seen it drive leads in a good fashion. And that's when you target competitor sites with display. So a couple of different ways you could do that. A display ad is simply just when you show an image on somebody on the internet's website, and you've seen that before. Right. Let's say your shoes again, your pair of shoes comes up on someone else's website. Now, one of the things you could do is you could actually set up a list of websites that you want your ad to appear on, and then bid to appear on those. And you could put one of your competitors in there as one of the ones on the list. This means whenever someone's on your competitor's site and they're looking at shoes, they've already got that buyer intent. Now they come down and they see your ad in the middle of the page, and they think, oh, do you know what? These shoes look really nice. Let me check out these ones. You've now hooked them in from the competitor's site. So it's a nice tactic.
Right.
That can. The other way you can do it is you can set up audiences that you define based on people's preferences. Mm-hmm. So remember before I said that when someone visits your site, websites can track you and figure out what you're interested in, what kind of things you like doing. You can actually on Google put in the name of your competitor's website as an interest. And that means that anyone who Google knows, through its complex algorithm and all that, anyone that Google knows would have an interest in your competitor's site or has been to your competitor's site, they'll join that list on that audience. Then you can go and target that audience with your display ads. So that's another way of doing it. Both of those are quite effective for display. But like I say, I don't usually encourage display to start, because search is going to do better for you, generally speaking.
Right.
And then that's point four. The final point is actually looking at the different ways in Google that you can adjust bidding, right? So one of the things people don't realize is when you get Google, you have a bid for when someone's searching on a desktop, you have a bid for when someone's searching on a tablet, and you have a bid for when someone's searching on a mobile. You also have a bid for different locations and times of the day. There's even more things than that you can bid in, but these ones are the core main ones. So one of the things that people don't really realize is that more people make Google searches now on mobile than they used to on desktop. Wow. A couple of years ago, mobile to desktop. And it's crazy to think. A lot of people will then say, actually, do you know what? I'm so used to using desktop, let me keep all my bids the same on everything. But actually, you're forgetting that more people are going to be searching on mobile. And it makes more sense for me to actually bid higher on there, because there's more people over there. Plus, because not every advertiser has picked up on this, and this is a cheeky tip for anyone that's watching this at the moment, a lot of people don't know that mobile is doing better than desktop right now. So that means that mobile is actually cheaper to bid on because less people are bidding on that.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's a cool tip. Yeah, I know the bidding strategies with Google. I mean, it's massive. I mean, it's just like, you know, you really do need to know that system pretty well, because I mean, if you get into that interface, it's pretty complex. So for a business owner, you know, you could be blowing your budget on things that you're like, oh man, I just put this thing and I didn't know how to stop it. And then, you know, that's why I think it's best that you hire a professional to kind of do it, even though there's a little setup fee and then they take a percentage of your spend. It's, you know, peace of mind. If the campaigns are working and they're driving you money, what does it matter to you, right? Like if you're making money and there's an ROI on this stuff, what does it care? Like you'll spend $20,000, $50,000, $100,000 if you know the campaigns are working and you're making a million or, you know, $200,000, $300,000 on your $100,000 you're spending. I mean, it doesn't really matter, right? So that's why I think it's key that, you know, people hire, you know, guys like you and stuff. So cool. Awesome. Well, that was a really great deep dive into stuff. That was fun. So I want to ask you a couple things. One is, like, what are your three top tools of choice that you use on a daily basis?
And when you say tools of choice, you mean in terms of just ad platforms?
Yeah, for ad types, things like what helps you, you know, if you're working and you're looking to run, say, ads and things like that, is there's a certain tools that you use on that type of a thing?
Yeah, I think with Google and Facebook, they both have large editor systems. So on Facebook, you've got this thing called Power Editor. On Google, you've got Google Editor. Those are really useful if you're making bulk changes in those systems. But those are only really important if you're, you know, you're really big advertising. You've got loads of different kind of accounts to manage. I find Google, because I've been doing it for so long and so many years, I find that tool itself, fine, Google Ads, absolutely fine to just use myself. With Facebook, similar thing. Facebook ads is really easy to use. And I'd be completely honest with you, that itself is probably, you don't really need to do more than that. In Facebook, it's very easy to use, even if you do it. It's the strategies and the things around it that maybe are the complicated bit, because you won't know what's worked for others and what they've seen. And I think one final tool, and this is going to be a bit of a weird one that a lot of people won't realize, is if you're a small business owner and you don't have much time to be able to figure these things out, but you want to give it a try yourself, YouTube is going to be your biggest friend when it comes to all of these things. Yeah. Videos like the one we've just made here, I've seen hundreds of thousands of other people who are trying to do the same kind of thing and just get information out there and tell people how to do this stuff, including walkthroughs and demos. Go and YouTube it all, and that's probably your best way of upskilling yourself.
Best thing, that's another tool that we got. Cool. And is there like a book or a blog or something that you stay current with, like that you like to read daily or every week?
Yeah, I think similar to what you said, I follow a few YouTubers who update a lot. So you've got people like Gary Vaynerchuk, Ty Lopez, some people who are very advanced in this area. A lot of them are coming out of the US. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that a few more come out of the UK. I may have to be the person that comes out of the UK. Because I just find video more digestible or something I could put on in the background to listen to while I'm doing other things. In terms of books and blogs, Hootsuite's fantastic. They've got an absolutely amazing blog. You kind of put me on the spot here. I'm trying to think of a few more.
Sorry, I should have asked you this earlier, but
HubSpot.
Pre-call. I'm going to ask you these things, but I like to do this kind of stuff because it's like, okay, what would you use? But yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, you know, I don't, you know, that's perfect. So Tor, how do people find out about you? How do they get in touch with you? They want to use your services. What's the best way to communicate with you?
Yeah, sure. So I've got a website up at the moment. It's www.simfluence.co.uk. So that's just influence with an S on the front. And then my actual email address is just my first name, Tor, T-O-R, at simfluence.co.uk. That's the easiest way to reach me at the moment. Okay. Currently, I'm working on putting together a few more different resources in order to reach me, so like YouTube. But if you search for my name on LinkedIn, it will come up at the top. I'm actually available to be contacted through there as well.
Cool. Awesome. Well, this has been fantastic. I really do appreciate the time taking out to do this. Learned a ton. And I hope to see you again on our show.
Yeah, no worries. I'm sure next time you see me, I'll be in a nice fancy office somewhere.
I like the palm in the back, you know?
Yeah.
Very tropical. Cool. All right, bud. I will talk to you. Thanks.
Brilliant. Thanks, Andrew. Have a good one.